My first job was working for an investment bank.
So, Carl, let's start. I want to thank you, first of all, for being here.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
I really want to thank you
for being here. It's my pleasure.
Where were you born?
So, I was born in Richmond.
Okay.
Richmond, Virginia. I grew up in, as I said before, I grew up in the Richmond area, Richmond and Petersburg area, most of my life. Grew up in that area.
You have siblings?
As I said before, I do have siblings. I have an older sister who passed away last year. She died. And then I have a second sister. And then I have an older brother. And then there's me. And then I have a younger brother that's four and a half years behind me. Right. So the first four of us was right behind each other.
Right. And that means, then that would mean that you guys are very, very close.
The dynamic and the togetherness for the first four of us, yes, we were. Yes, we were. Well, we were close. My oldest sister and I, is that we were the academics.
Right.
My oldest sister was very smart, incredibly smart, okay? Right. She was very observant. And I think I took a lot of it from her. Because she was the oldest sister, she's the one that scolded me, and
she was your second mother.
Yeah, I mean, I never raised my voice to her.
You better not.
And when she died, I was on a plane coming back, and when we were having a funeral ceremony, and I had to speak on behalf of the family, and I said to everyone, you know what? It dawned on me when I was on the flight coming back from Japan to be here with everyone. I said, you know what? I never raised my voice at my sister. It just dawned on me. I was sitting on the flight because I was writing notes.
You mean when you're on the flight on the way there?
Yeah, to go to the funeral.
Okay, yeah.
And it's just reflections.
Okay.
It's just a reflection, and I was doing some retrospectives about my life and my life with her, my sister, because we always talked a lot and everything. She always approached me very calmly. What are you doing? How you doing?
And was she always in your business when you were growing up?
She was making sure that I kept my head straight. Okay, she was like, she would be very tactical with me. So she would ask me pointed questions, and I would answer, give her good answers, sometimes vague answers. And then she said to me, what does that mean? and then I had to do a deep dive, and I had to break down the answers, and because of this. But long story short, yeah, so her and I, we were the academics. Well, all of our family was pretty smart,
right.
Academically and everything, but I would say my oldest sister and I, we
took excelled in that area.
We kept
You took it to a whole nother level.
Yes, we did.
So as a child, you were more academic than you were physical.
Yeah, I mean, I did play sports.
Okay.
I played Pee Wee League football all the way up, Pee Wee League all the way into high school. Okay. Played football, basketball,
Baseball.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, I'm a football. I played football here in Japan.
Is that right?
I was the first foreigner to play in the X League here.
No, you really?
Yeah, I am the first. It's all publicized.
Okay.
So when I came here,
Where did you come here?
I came here in the 80s.
Okay, because you came after me.
I came here in the 80s, and I came here under different circumstances. Mm. I came here to study too as well. And I came here to study, and I did some work in the private sector and also in the public sector for the U.S. government as well.
Okay.
From a young age, I was a reader.
My
mother bought a set of encyclopedias. I went through the whole set. I read word for word.
So when she was getting those encyclopedias, it was basically for you.
Well, she was getting it for me because
you and your sisters, yeah.
Yeah, because my elementary school teachers were telling her during my report card at the end of the year, they'll write a comment about her. And like for 4 years straight, he loves to read. He loves to read. He loves to read. He loves to read. He reads. And even when I was home after school, I did play sports, but I would always do my homework. And I'd sit back and I would just read. I'd go through books and read famous authors. I read history books. I read books on philosophy.
Did you have anything that you favored?
No, not really. I was pretty, I was unbiased.
So you're doing the encyclopedia. Just
so I read an encyclopedia. I learn a topic. I learn a subject. And then I go to the public library and I check out books or the library at school. And I take a book home. I take novels. I'd read novels. I read books of all genre. And I learn. I just learned so much. I was like a smorgasbord.
Do you remember one of the first novels you ever read?
That's a good question. One of the first novels I read was Carter G. Woodson. I read a book by him. And it was by Carter G. Woodson, and also I read a book, Horton Foote, famous writer, Horton Foote. And those are some of the first books I was reading. I was heavily exposed to novels, and even all through high school, because...
What were the novels about?
They were about life stories, about historical history. It's about drama. I love legal thrillers.
Okay.
I love crime thrillers. I like to read those. I just can't stop reading them. Legal thrillers.
So from when you first got hooked...
Yeah, I got hooked on legal and political thrillers.
Okay.
I started reading books about slavery. Way back. The things that are published right now, that are coming out right now, I knew back
because
in the 60s.
Right, you had to really look for it.
But I had to look for it, though. And so if you look at the fact base behind all of this now, what I absorbed in my younger years and up to now, I said, well, you know, I knew this. I learned about this. My drama teacher, who taught me so much when I was in high school, she had us reading social context in the world, about understanding how people are incarcerated for their political beliefs. I learned about Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the Gulag Archipelago. I read that when I was 15 years old. Read it. She made us read it.
Was she Russian?
No. I don't think she was Russian.
Okay.
Her name was Ms. Lee, then her name was Ms. Stefan. But she was a good teacher. She made me read. She like, wow. And even till today, the things that I learn and when I read now, I said, Mrs. Lee, she taught me all of this.
Did you ever get to meet her again? After
I never saw her again.
You lost contact?
Yeah, we lost contact, but she was a mentor to me. Because she instilled to us a discipline about reading and learning about everything in the world, learning about famous playwrights, famous author, learning about social, you know, the learning about the political arena too as well, and blending at the end.
She was your drama teacher.
She was my drama teacher, and she coached me. She coached me.
So she's having you do the stuff that they'd have you usually do in history class.
Yes.
And stuff like that. So you'd be a better actor.
Exactly. And I was able to take that and manipulate that. And I was always in high school drama plays and one-act play festivals. And then I participated in high school forensics. It's called forensics back then. It's a combination of table topics, poetry, prose readings, spelling. I made it to the state championship. I was the first person from my high school to make it to the regionals, and then I made it all the way to the state.
Doing what?
Reading poetry.
Doing poetry? Is it of your own?
No. Okay. I read a famous poem by a famous author by the name of James Weldon Johnson, and the poem was about Go Down Death. When you're giving in a poetry contest, of course, you have to recite it by heart, but the empathy behind it and showing the emotion is just like basically, it's like you immersing yourself through all of this.
You become part of it.
And you become it. And it was so believable. And I won first place on my first try. I made it to the state championship.
And she helped you do all this.
She did. She schooled me. And I still remember her.
It's hard to forget something like that.
That right there in my memory right now, and all through the years up to now, and what I see in the world today, I said, she taught me all of this. I said, she taught me that. She taught me this back when I was really young. And I told people, what you're learning right now, I was taught this. I could talk to politicians right now and say, no. No, I'm sorry. No, I learned that back then, okay? I learned everything from a historical context about world events. I learned this in the 70s. And even now, if you fast forward to now, the whole trajectory, it's what she taught me, and she was saying, she said, Carl, you're gonna remember everything. She would always tell us, she said, you will remember everything in the future.
You know something, whenever someone meets a teacher that is so in tune and understands how to work with human beings,
sure,
it leaves an indelible mark on you for the rest of your life.
Anyway.
The thing, when those teachers were saying he loves to read, and you hearing that, that's why I tell parents, be careful what you're saying around your kids,
sure,
or to them. When Absolutely. You're joking and saying something like that, they're internalizing that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can say that from the opposite end. Someone's saying, well, he's not really that smart.
Why would you say that? Why would
Comparing to someone else.
Yes.
See, wrong thing.
And that's, and
never,
and
ever,
compare.
Ever do that.
Sure.
And that makes the child compare themselves to everyone else.
Sure. And they...
And it doesn't help them one bit, but your teachers were doing such a benefit to you from the beginning. He loves to read, he loves to read. And then her telling you, you'll never forget. She could have messed you up too by saying, you always forget.
Yeah, she was
She could
like,
have messed you up, but she gave you a superpower.
She did. And even now, like I was home just on the holidays, and I have a lot of friends that we were in drama and liberal arts together, and reading and English, and we were in this group called we were in the drama club, and the thespian club, and I was an honor thespian, and I was a drama, and a lot of us that group, that team, we are still connected, and we talk about her sometimes and everything, and I said, yeah, okay,
isn't that beautiful?
What she taught me and that has molded me internally.
Okay, so where'd you go from high school, having this fantastic drama teacher that taught you to read, internalize it, and be able to act it out?
Yeah.
So where'd you? So now you're going to become an actor. So
I wanted to be an actor.
So from high school,
I was awarded a two-year scholarship to be an actor at this small liberal arts school in North Carolina. I wanted to be an actor. I actually did. I thought I could make it. I thought I could actually do it. And then I got cold feet. I said, do I really want to do this? And I gave it some thought, shifted. I've always said I wanted to explore the world. I wanted to do things different. I wanted to thread the needle, if I could put it.
But you got cold feet.
I still did acting.
Did you go into the two-year college?
I attended, then said.
You accepted it. So
I accepted. I went for the summer courses at first and everything because right. I did a summer session.
Okay.
I went down there and then I said, oh, do I really want to do this?
Something about the school. It's not that easy, Carl. Come on.
Yeah.
Wait. So what happened?
I got cold feet. I said.
Were there people that you, did you compare yourself to other people?
No.
It wasn't that.
I just, something hit me.
It didn't fit.
This is not you, Carl. You can use that. You can do your acting as a sidebar. Okay.
But that's not going to be what's going to take you there.
But that's not going to take you there. Okay. And I've always thought of myself as a global person.
Okay.
And so I went back and attended the University of Maryland.
Wait, so you didn't take the scholarship?
I turned it down. Yeah. My mother was kind of like upset about it.
I bet she would be.
Yeah.
So you went to Maryland on your own dime then?
Yeah, I did.
So you had to work while you were doing it or what?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did it on my own dime. I did, and that's how my U.S. government worked. Came into play. I was pretty smart
right after
academically.
Summer, while you were still young?
Yeah.
So did they approach you or did you approach them?
It was mutual.
It was mutual?
Yeah.
Okay, so you came together at the same time?
Yeah. I took a psych test.
Okay.
And exploded off the charts.
Okay.
So.
You were found. Right.
I was found.
And that's not unusual. I have some friends like that as well. Too.
And I'm still found after all these years.
Okay. Wow.
And so.
So how long did you stay in Maryland? Did you do the 4 years?
Yeah, I did back and forth over time, and then I was out in California too for a bit.
But wait, so what, from the school in North Carolina, which was just a summer.
Yes.
Then you went to Maryland.
Yes.
Which is in Delaware, isn't
it? No.
Is it in D.C.?
University of Maryland, College Park.
Okay, University of Maryland. Then you went from there to California?
Went to California.
All right, what did you do in California?
I was doing summer courses in theater and drama. I was in a troupe.
Okay.
And we was traveling up and down the
from
West
Maryland?
Coast. I'm sorry?
From Maryland?
No, on my own.
On your own, okay.
And on my own, and that's when I got tapped to do certain
some
things.
Of the stuff, okay.
Yeah, for the U.S.
Right.
government and
right,
everything.
Okay.
And while I was there, I was out there, and I still got the acting bug, and I was traveling up and down on the West Coast.
Okay.
And doing.
So how long did you do
doing
that?
Play festivals, about almost a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then from there, where did you have to go? Where did you go after that? Did you go overseas for the first time then?
I was infatuated with overseas, going overseas, and then struck a deal to come to Tokyo.
Okay.
Come to Tokyo. And
what year was that?
81.
And I must have met you in the 82. Early 80s as well,
yes.
Anyway, too.
Yes.
And that's when you were working with the computer? Was it computers?
I was working with computers then.
Computers then?
Yeah, I was working computers. I was working. I was building analytical models,
right.
Writing code,
okay,
writing code and writing sensitive code.
And those, what was your experience like when you first came to Japan?
Oh.
And why did you pick Japan?
I had an infatuation, always had an infatuation to live outside the United States. As I said before, my mindset, even in high school, was global. I wasn't like any ordinary American living in the United States. Most Americans are only concerned about their own community, the area, the places where they live. They have no vision or no thought process about
what. Do you think
what,
that's unique to Americans, or is it just basically how human beings are? Because almost every country.
Well, it's every country.
Every country.
Every country is like that, but no one wants to take the in. No one has the intuition or take the initiative to actually try to see the world from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so that's how governments keep their people, because they want
exactly.
to keep them at home.
All right,
they don't want them to go. They don't want them travel.
Right.
They don't want anybody to pay the taxes and do other things.
Exactly.
They want to keep them at home, so they make it as pleasant as possible.
Yeah, and I felt that basically. I always had the sense that, and I'm pro. I mean, I'm American. I'm pro American from my thought process about from a foreign policy and political perspective, what America should be. Okay, so I get all of that, but my mindset has always been international. I'm not like any ordinary American citizen. I just don't feel that way. There's much more to see about the world than just living inside the United States. And most Americans, and there are a lot of people who travel outside the United States, but most Americans are only consumed about what's on their block or
well,
their community.
It's a pretty big continent.
It's
50 states, so I think it reminds me of the business partners I had in the late 70s, early 80s, and they were in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only African American, and my other three partners weren't. And they thought they were doing business because they lived in Connecticut,
sure.
And they had business in California. That was international to them.
And that was international to them. That's all they knew.
That 3,000 miles, wow, we're doing business. It took me forever to get them to get a fax machine. They kept on sending me telexes. I said, I'm getting tired of going down to Unacho to get
KDD.
Yeah, KDD.
KDD and
get
a telex.
Please give me a door. So I sent them a used fax machine. And they were amazed. Whoa, the paper comes. Does the paper come from near to here? I said, no,
you have to put paper in, man. It's like technology.
And I said, because that was the time, if you didn't have fax on your name card here, you weren't a business person.
Sure.
You had to have fax. a fax number on your card here in Japan. And and the U.S. wasn't still using cards then at that time.
Sure.
But the U.S. has so much innovation, and Japan takes it and refines it.
Sure.
But as far as ideas go, we have a plethora of ideas.
We have a plethora.
Everything. And I think and any time we have any kind of situation, as I'm sure you're aware of, we come together like a bee, you know, to the hive. You don't want to mess with that. We'll come together like this. As soon as that situation is taken care of, we'll start eating each other again.
That's true. That's true. That's the way we are. I mean, as I said before, I will always be American.
Right, right.
Because I was born there. It's my country. And I am pro-American.
Right.
I feel that we're the only, I feel that we should be the only superpower. Yeah. We should be.
Right.
We should be. Because the way the rest of the world, and how we build and how we invest and we establish relationships with other countries to actually put our standing in place, I am very much pro-American.
Did you stay here the whole time after you came here the first beginning?
I left and did some traveling all throughout Asia, spent a few months here, a few months there. I was in the Philippines. I was in Kuala Lumpur. I went to Bangladesh. I went to Africa then.
And these are all your first times?
Yeah, I mean, right. I did a lot of traveling.
Okay.
And then
How long did that last?
That was like 18 months.
18 months. Then you came back.
And then I came back.
Right here.
I came back.
You never had any desire to go to the States and
no,
live there again?
No, never.
From the moment you left?
Never. Never. Of course not.
It's
just my mindset. My mindset then was like.
So once you got on that plane, you said, okay, good, this
good.
Is it.
I see a different idea. I see a different side of the world, a different view of the world than most people would ever even gravitate to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I honestly felt that way. I've honestly felt as if basically I'm an international person.
Do you find many international people now that you've left America that you run into, or do you think most people are still very much homebodies, want to stay in
they the pretty much areas. Are homebodies.
They don't want to still travel too
yeah,
much.
Yeah, yeah. And even when I was young, with my brothers and sisters, I was more like the outsider of the family.
Okay.
I didn't go on family trips or hang out and all that. I didn't want to do it.
You stayed home and just
read. Stayed home and read, and I guess I was plotting.
Okay.
Plotting my
how I'm going to escape
and everything. My mother would sit back and watch me and analyze me and observe me and everything. but seriously, when I was young, I was the loner. I was the outside of the family, and I was always by myself. I was very intuitive. I had a vision, as I mentioned earlier. My thought process behind all of this was that I'm going to write my own playbook.
Go.
I'm going to change the trajectory.
You have children?
I do.
How many children do you have?
Girls. Three.
Three. You make it sound like you got a whole bunch of girls.
Yeah.
You have three girls?
Yes.
Okay. Are they close in age?
My oldest daughter, almost.
Okay.
My oldest daughter, she just turned 25 on Christmas Eve.
Are they all living here?
Yes.
They all are here?
Yeah, except for my youngest daughter. My youngest daughter, she's in Canada right now.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing research and studying, but she graduates in March. She's coming back next month.
So they're all fluent in English and Japanese?
Yeah, they are.
Okay. So I was going to say their mother's Japanese.
Yes.
Okay.
So, and with that said, pivoting back to my life here, when I came here, obviously you needed to work. So I was writing code, I was writing programs with computers.
Where did you learn to do that?
I was pretty much self-taught. I did learn in university,
right.
But the latest and the greatest.
You can't get from university.
You can't get
they're
that.
Too slow. They're too slow.
They're extremely too slow.
Right.
And I was doing a lot of high-level analytics and theory-based code writing. So I was doing some code writing for here in Tokyo.
Okay.
And then someone latched on to me and said, oh, okay. You ever try writing code for finance? I said, well, I can do it and everything. And then I got, my first job was working for an investment bank. Okay. I was hired and I worked for First Boston, which was turned to Credit Suisse, which is no longer no more. as of last year. So I started my career.
But they belong by
UBS now.
UBS now, right?
So I started my career.
My son works for Credit Suisse.
Yeah.
My youngest.
Now?
Yeah.
Okay. So yes. Yeah. So I started my career at First Boston, which was Credit Suisse. That's how I started my career in investment banking, and technology and trading, mm-hmm. Writing code, writing analytics for bond pricing. I started my career in that. And that blossomed over the years, working in investment banking and in the finance field, and technology and operations and trading. And over the years, I started moving towards strategy and management consulting. And I've been doing that for a while now.
And then, but now you're also a professor, aren't you?
I do. So, and that's interesting. This is an interesting story, how this all happened. Okay. And this is due to the financial crisis.
All right.
So
you mean the Lehman Shock?
Lehman Shock.
Okay.
And what happened was, over the years, so I worked for Credit Suisse, First Boston Credit Suisse, in two different stints. I came back in 2006 to help them set up their private banking wealth management operating model here in Tokyo. There was a SWAT team of us. And prior to that, I had worked for a hedge fund. I had worked in consulting for insurance and insurance strategy, CRM, and I worked for PwC and everything. And going back to that, after working for a hedge fund here in Tokyo to set up to help a buyout, a leveraged buyout. Of a Japanese bank here, I went back to Credit Suisse private wealth, and I was out and did some work in Switzerland, and to learn the Credit Suisse way of private banking and wealth management. Then came back to Singapore, and then came back to Tokyo to help set up the operating platform.
How long did that take?
That took like 6 months, okay. 6-7 months, and that's when Lehman Shock hit. But during that time, I met a guy, started conversing with a guy who was writing a book about business models. And he was writing a book, and he asked me, would you like to contribute to the book, okay, as a co-creator, co-writer? So I said, okay. It's just a book. It's about business models, a business model canvas.
What's the name of it?
If you look at my business card, it says it's called Business Model Generation.
Okay.
So I helped co-create that book. Mm. And that book is a bestseller right now. Mm. It is a bestseller. So, and my name is all in the book. So I helped write the book. We didn't think the book was going to take off. The book took off like a year later because of the canvas. It's a Creative Commons license. It has 9 building blocks. How you write a business, how you create your business model. You create your business model based off of that, off 9 building blocks. And that took off. And that's when Lehman Shock hit, I just left. I had no more to do with this no more. I had made my money. Made a lot of money over the years. So okay. Not a whole lot, but it was enough.
Enough to do what you
wanted
to do.
Enough to do what I wanted to do. And I said, I'm going to change my life.
So what'd you do?
I wanted to get into transformation, entrepreneurship.
Is that when you became a consultant?
Yes. And okay. So what happened was the book took off. The book is a global bestseller right now. It's called Business Model Generation. I started using the book to teach corporate innovation, transformation, and entrepreneurship, and teaching entrepreneurship how to write a business model, how to create a business model. Because the premise behind this is that basically companies, you can write a business plan all you want to, but if you don't know have a business model, if you don't know who your paying customer is, how you're going to attract business, if you don't understand your own business model, if you can't plot it out and create a blueprint behind it to know exactly how you're going to make money and your value proposition behind it, then you will fail. And you will fail. Trust me, you will fail. So what happened was that the book started gaining traction. The canvas started gaining traction. So I started working with clients here in Japan and teaching the business model canvas, going through all the building blocks. So I was prototyping companies, their existing business models. And that led me to actually teach entrepreneurs Because anyone who say, I'm an entrepreneur, you're an entrepreneur, I say, well, do you have a paying customer? How are you going to make money? Show me your business model. And I'll tell people this. And I tell people this, I said, you know, you want to be an entrepreneur? You're a self-taught entrepreneur? Okay. Show me your business model. I don't care about your business plan. The business plan can come, but you need the business model. Because when investors and venture capitalists and private equities, when we invest in you, we want to ask two questions. Do you have a paying customer? Show me how you're going to make money. And as a VC, as a venture capitalist, and what I do now is that I look at pitch decks. I look at all of this, and I scan it, and I look at it, and I say, okay, here's something that's viable. Mm-hmm. They have a minimal viable product. They have a product out there that they have a customer that's interested in this. Okay. They have a market share, a potential market share. They've done their due diligence to do their customer analytics and their research to find out getting out of the building to actually talk to customers, mm-hmm. which is what you're trying to do. And so these are the questions that I pose. So I started doing that, and that turned into corporate innovation, helping companies. Mm-hmm. And one of the first companies, one of my first clients, how I got my first client to do corporate innovation business models was a traditional Japanese food and beverage company. And can you imagine me as an American, African American, that they wanted me? Because they saw me teach a course.
Did you do this in English or Japanese?
I did it in English and Japanese. I did a facilitation course. And I showed them what the existing business model looks like. I had them, and I facilitated the workshop, and I said, show me your business model, your corporate business model. And of course, from an R&D, research and development, and marketing and product development, they said, well, we think our model looks like this. So I said, well, let's prototype and let's see what the feature will look like. And one of my first clients was Kagome.
Okay.
Wow. That was my first client.
That's a big company.
And that was my first client.
That's interesting.
And I'm still on retainer with them.
Is that right? My
goodness. So they do corporate innovation. So I taught them business model innovation. Mm. I taught that client, you know, transformation, product development, how to prototype using design thinking, ideation and design thinking. So I took courses in that. So I teach design thinking, and I teach business model innovation, I teach corporate innovation. And what happened was, Keio University is one of the well-known established universities in Japan. It's one of the Japan Ivies. Mm-hmm. So Keio University, they brought the book, and they tried to teach it internally at their campus. And they failed. And what happened was, because I took courses at KO2 as well, a long, long time ago, international courses there. And they tried to teach the book, and they failed. So my contacts there, they had noticed and saw my name in the book. And, well, Carl is in Japan. Okay, let's ask him to come back. So they asked me to come back and teach the course at their graduate school. So I teach at the graduate school, I teach entrepreneurship and startup. So I teach business model using the business model canvas. I teach value proposition using the value proposition canvas. And I teach the process behind it, creating value propositions using design thinking techniques, empathy mapping, understanding the customer from the customer perspective. The pain points, the jobs, there's a method we call jobs to be done. What job is the customer trying to get done today? Mm-hmm. See, you may think that customers buy your products. In reality, customers do not buy products. They don't buy your product. They hire your product to do a job. And if that job is successful, they become a repeat customer. Mm-hmm. See, customers hire products or services to do a job. That's the mindset and the thinking behind all of this. And people are the understanding that, you know, if you go out to Yamada Denki and you buy a toaster or a rice cooker, well, what's the purpose of a rice cooker? Mm-hmm. What's
cook
the job
rice.
Of a rice
right,
cooker?
Cook rice, right.
That's the mindset. The job of a rice cooker is to cook rice. Mm-hmm. So there's a methodology for marketing and product development that we call understanding customers' jobs. What job is your customer trying to solve or trying to get done today? What are their pain points? Mm. So I teach this. Wow. And that's a different way of thinking. From a marketing perspective, even in global and in marketing, most of the business schools globally right now, they teach this concept. Mm-hmm. It's called jobs to be done. Mm. It's the theory behind it.
Let me ask this, Colin. If people wanted to contact you, how would they go about doing so?
I have a company here.
Okay.
Carlstone Capital.
Carlstone Capital.
Carlstone Capital. I'm located in ABC Garden Place.
Okay.
I do transformation. I do organizational change management, people change. So I've tied all of this in together as part of corporate innovation and business agility. Mm. So to teach innovation, corporate innovation, change management from a people mindset perspective, because as you know, people are resistant to change. So
sure.
I blended all of this in into my portfolio of products and services. And also I teach this at universities as well.
We're gonna have a lot more to talk about. I think
we will.
I'm gonna have to have you come on again. The reason why, not just you and I, we're gonna do this when we eat breakfast. We're gonna
sure.
do some of that then. But I'm gonna have you on again because I think for you to give some of this information and just talk about that only, this is about you this time.
Of course.
And we've gotten to where you are now, but I wanna have you on again so you can talk about how you're teaching your classes
sure.
and some of the major points to go through. But
sure.
before we end the podcast, there's a question I'd like to ask.
Sure.
Knowing what you know now, if you could go back in time and meet the younger Kyle, what would you tell him? What advice would you give him? And how old would he be?
Breathe. Breathe.
Okay.
Take it all in and just breathe. And just let it go with the flow. Learn, okay, as you go with it. Learn, suck it all in, and learn and just explore. There are no limitations. There are no limitations. There are no limitations in Japan. People think there are limitations. This country offers you everything. They give it to you. They want you here. And
don't,
people don't understand it.
Don't tell everybody that because you're getting ready to run over here, man. Take
okay.
what we got going.
Just breathe. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
I want to thank all of you for watching or listening to this podcast. And remember, it's all on loan, so continue to reach for the stars.
Because you're too blessed to be stressed.